Now here's the deal. Whenever you have in cushion more than 10 times the volatility, you stabilize the company. Because people can tolerate a 10% fluctuation without reaction. That's why the average person across the world in the credit card industrialized nations have a 10% debt level because they can't tolerate more than 10% without reacting. And that's why religions have asked for tithes, 10%, because they knew people could tolerate 10% without reactions. That's as most as they could do. If you have $1 million in investing, and all of a sudden the million goes to 900,000 because the market's down 10%, you're probably going to go, yeah, I don't like that. But you're probably not going to sell out. You'll just ride the wave. But if it drops 20 and 30% because it's more than 10% fluctuation, you're going to sell that booger. Statistically, you'll sell at the bottom. And if it goes up 20 to 30%, you'll tend to go borrow other people's money and put yourself on margin in a manic phase and do unwise things there. You'll do unwisdom here. You'll do unwisdom there. You'll exaggerate your power and your potential financially there. You'll minimize your power and potential here. And you'll react because of volatility, because you don't know how to manage the emotions, because you don't have a cushion. That's why saving is wiser to start with than investing. And investing is wiser to do before speculating, because you got to earn the right to volatility and handling volatility. And anytime there's more than 10% of the volatility, statistically, human psyche will react. If you're in a society and you've got one friend, and that one friend is the only person you know in that society, and they reject you, you're devastated. If you have 10 friends and one of them rejects you, you can handle that. If you have 100 friends and one rejects you, you go, next. If you have 1,000 friends and one rejects you, you go, okay. Part of daily actions. So a cushion in society allows you to tolerate fluctuations in social structure. The same thing also in economics. So let's go and tie these parts from this morning and this together for a moment. We said that the hierarchy of your values dictates your financial destiny. And the highest value is, I'm saying, if you want to build wealth, you have to put saving high on the value. And I also said that if you don't declare your worth, don't expect somebody else to. You have to value yourself. So here's the summary. The wealthy pay themselves first. And I know you've heard that. It's been an ancient proverb, but it's true. The wealthy pay themselves first. And they put themselves in cushions. And there's two things that stabilize people building wealth. One is greater cushion, and the other is greater vision. And we talked about greater vision and cause this morning. So the greater your cause, the more stable you are. Let me emphasize that. Let me explain that one now. If I told you that I wanted to write 1,000 books in my life, and that was my goal, write 1,000 books. I've written 239. I haven't reached 1,000 yet. 1,000 books. So when I get done with a book, and completed a book, am I going to be over-elated about it, manic about it? Not if I got 1,000 books. I go, next. Next book. Let's go. If you have a vast vision to make millions of dollars, and all of a sudden you make a $5,000 day, are you as likely to get overly manic about it, or you just go, great, let's next step? So the greater your vision, the greater your cushion, the less the volatility you have. The more stable you are emotionally, the more money you make. Because money goes where there's certainty. And money goes away from where there's uncertainty. So the greater the vision, which we mentioned this morning, and the greater the cushion, which I'm getting ready to build into, the more stable you are. The more stable you are, the more money goes to you. The less reactive you are. The less radical changes you do, the more you refine things instead of redefining things. So on the hierarchy of your values, if you're feeling guilty because you think you've done something unworthy, you will tend to put other people first. And let me elaborate on that. In the second century, a religious patriarch named Tertullian, a Christian bishop, basically said this, and I can show you his writings if you'd like to go see him. You can go and see him in any major library just about. He says, we must keep them ignorant and poor. For if they ever discover the source and the mythos behind our work, this whole thing falls. He was a bishop of the Catholic faith at the time. He knew that if we kept them impoverished and kept them believing that it is more blessed to give than to receive, then we would accumulate vast fortune and vast power. He knew this. He was very clear about this. I've got a book called The Papacy. And The Papacy is the marketing ploys of the Catholic faith from the beginning of the Catholic faith and what their strategies were. It's a fascinating book. I got it from Rome at the Vatican. And what Einstein later came to realize, that religious idealisms are the source of human suffering. Let me give you an example. If all of a sudden your religion says, I'm supposed to be happy without sad, I'm supposed to be nice without mean, I'm supposed to be kind without cruel, I'm supposed to be positive without negative, I'm supposed to be one-sided person, when I'm really a two-sided person. How many of you are both nice and mean at times? Kind and cruel. Positive and negative. Upbeat and downbeat. Giving and taking. That's the truest aspect of our nature. But if we set up an idealism that we pick up from authority, that we're supposed to be one side without the other, and then we strive to be that one side without the other, then when we fail because we're two-sided beings, we beat ourselves up because we're not living up to this idealism. When we beat ourselves up, we knock ourselves down and live in the self-righteous persona. When we live in the self-righteous persona, we go into altruism and we tend to give to the source of our suffering, which is the infatuation with authority. How many of you just got what I'm saying? This is known psychology. It was known 2,000 years ago as it is known today. So if I tell you what you're supposed to be like and you aren't able to attain it and you think I have the source of you attaining it, then you're going to want to give to me to buy your way in, if that makes any sense. Now, the truth is that fair exchange is the secret of growing wealth-wise. Doing a service that inspires you in a way that's inspiring to other people and having a fair exchange. But what happens is if we go in there, we give power to an authority, we minimize ourselves, we go into altruism, we will put everybody else but ourselves first. You can't obtain wealth that way. The haves, who run the authority, knew better. And the have-nots, who didn't understand that, who live by the power of the authority and the idealisms of the authority, will keep minimizing themselves for the sake of others. And then we market that as a good thing in society to keep that oppression. Are you with me on this? What I'm trying to do is set that free, because authority is whatever you choose to make. You choose to give authority to things. There's no reason why you can't become that authority. As Einstein said, my contempt for authority is what made me authority. So if you are in a situation where you're minimizing yourself for others because you're beating yourself up because you're not living up to an idealism, it's time to break the fantasy of that idealism, realize that human beings have both sides, get back into fair exchange, and then value yourself. Because the degree that you value yourself, the world values you. The degree that you value yourself, the world values you. In the process of doing that, if you pay yourself first, things shift. Huge. When I first got into my practice years ago, I was in that teeter-totter on the self-worth down. And I basically did this. I went in there and I served patients long hours. I came in there before everybody else. I came in and I left there after everybody else. I had an assistant that started with me, and then I got another assistant, then I got me a doctor, and I got me another assistant, got me another doctor, and got me another assistant, kept growing my business. But I still didn't have much to show for it. Because the more I grew my business, I just kept putting my money back in the business and kept hiring more people, and then I kept having not much left over for me. Anybody ever done that in business? Then about a year or two into business, I'm kind of burning out because I still don't have a whole lot to show for it. But everybody else is getting paid on time, and whatever's left over, I'm getting what's left over. I was getting the spit at the bottom of the barrel. You know what I'm talking about? If you drink a glass of water or beer or something like that, the spit at the bottom,